there, David?
I'm here.
Well, what's the problem?
Well, the problem is very simply this. Listening to you for two nights running. Running down what I'm doing.
I'm not running down what you're doing. I'm just, you know, I...
Yeah, you're running down what I'm doing. I'm not selling your show. You're tired. You're sorry that you signed a contract with me. This is the worst contract you ever signed. That, going on and on and on and on. Isn't that what you've been saying?
Yeah, I've been saying that.
Why do you think I had to put up with that?
Well, it's part of the deal, man. It's part of the deal.
What is part of the deal?
It's part of the deal. This is a webcast, okay? Now, I didn't bring it up. You brought it up.
Part of what? Your webcast every night.
First of all, you got to understand something. You and I are on the air right now, okay? We're on the radio, okay?
Yeah, no, I don't understand that.
No, okay, but the webcast you're talking about is part of my pre-show. So you're bringing up something now that people who are listening to the radio show don't hear any part of.
Well, the fact of the matter is, Phil, and maybe they ought to hear this, every night Phil Henry is on his pre-show, as he calls it, on his webcast, and all he does is rip the job that I do on behalf of his show.
Of course I do.
Of course you do.
Yeah, because it's the lousiest job that I've ever seen done for this radio show since I got into this business in 1973. You take the prize, man. You take the prize.
I take the prize for what?
You can't sell it. You can't promote it. You can't affiliate it. You can't do anything with this show. You have absolutely butchered my radio show.
Well, now I've heard it all, friend. I tell you something.
Well, it's not the first time you've heard it.
Yeah, but the fact that you go on the air with that...
I didn't go on the air with that. That was my webcast. That's what you're complaining about.
Yeah, but now you're on the radio tonight. I understand that I brought it up. Okay, I understand that.
Good. I'm glad you do, because you did bring it up.
But for you to make a statement like that, even if it were true, let's say that it is true. Let's say that I'm doing the worst job you've ever seen done by anybody that ever handled your radio show.
You are. That's not... I'm not making it up. You are. And you know I like you.
Oh, he likes me. Well, that makes it all better.
Well, I do. I like you personally. I think you're a good guy, but either you're in over your head, or you're lazy, or I don't know what your problem is.
I'm lazy. Is that it?
Well, every time I'm talking to you, you're out to dinner or something. I don't know what the hell you're doing. I don't know who you're talking to. I don't know what deals you're cutting. All I know is every month, man, this show makes no money. We got no affiliates. I don't even know if anybody's listening to this show.
And you're blaming me for that?
Yeah, you're the guy that goes out and cuts all the business for this show.
And what you said tonight, which is you can't wait to get out of this deal with me, is that real?
That is it real? Nothing. I've never said anything truer in my life.
Well, that hurts.
I'm sorry.
That really hurts.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I truly am.
Well, then why would you say it?
Because it is a paralyzingly frustrating experience, man, to sit here night after night and look at the job you're doing for me, which is no job at all, and I got to come in here and give my 100% anyway. But I'll tell you this much. At least you're talking to me, man. At least the lines of communication are wide open.
What did I tell you when you first got into business with me? I said, you know what? I'm not like some of these big companies, man. I'm always going to be there. The lines of communication are going to be wide open.
Right. Well, at least you've come through that way, man. You know, at least you got the gumption and the guts and the pair to sit and listen to what is an honest appraisal. You know, it's one thing for the country to be doing poorly in the economy and not have... not have the circulation of dollars in business and commerce that we have in a healthy economy. But it's another thing entirely for a guy to, A, lay an egg on the job, just not do the job at all, and B, avoid talking about it. So I appreciate your open lines of communication.
Yeah, well, you know, and it's difficult for me because I'm sitting here with the open lines of communication, you telling me what a lousy job I'm doing.
Well, what do you want me to say, man? You want me to lie to you? You want me to come in here and start talking about what a great job you're doing? I mean, what happened to America that we cannot hear the truth anymore? If you suck, you suck. Okay? I hear it all the time, man. I'm on the radio. I get emails and I get comments and I get people telling me all the time what they think of me. Good, bad, and indifferent. Okay? What happened to you guys in business behind the scenes that you all of a sudden everything shrunk up and went back up into your... You know what I mean? Like they haven't dropped yet? What happened?
Nothing happened. It's just, you know, Life's tough for us, too.
Well, you still got to get called on the carpet for it. You know what we need in this country? We need more people getting called on the carpet and being told, you stink at your job. Get out of here. We need more people fired, not fewer. Because the streets, the park benches, the want ads, they're filled with people who are waiting to take those jobs, who are waiting in line to take the place of somebody who is just screwing the pooch, who thinks they've got a constitutional right to keep their job for the rest of their lives, who think they got some constitutional right to screw their job up six ways to sunset, and in the process, screw up a whole lot of other people. They think they got a right just to sit there in their dead ass and do that. We ought to fire more people. And I ain't talking about the ones that have been traditionally fired. I'm talking more behind the scenes, man. I'm talking you guys, managers, salespeople, all you middle management slobs, all you guys that have taken it out on the guy on the assembly line, all you people that have taken it out on the everyday hourly worker, all you people that have taken it out on the people at the check stand, you've taken it out on the guy working the counter, you've taken it out on the guy that's putting rivets in the Chevy, all you guys in your offices, you ought to get your asses bounced.
Henry for president.
Are you listening to what I'm saying?
Yeah, I'm listening to you. Do you want to can me? Well, you can't. You got a contract with me.
I understand that. But you're right. I just gave a speech.
Yeah, well, okay. Nice speech. But you can't can me. I got a contract with you. I'll sue you. You understand that, right?
Yeah, sure. I understand that. Good for you. I didn't say I was quitting. All I said was, get out and do some work for a change. And don't give me any excuses. You're the kind of guys, you don't want to hear excuses. You're the kind of guys that say, don't give me excuses, I want the job done. Well, guess what? I'm turning around and saying the same thing to you. I don't want to listen to your crying and your whining about how bad the economy is. I don't care how bad the economy is. What do you think of that? I don't give a sweet Jesus how bad the economy is. I don't care if it's really hard to make a living out there. Oh, go cry to your mama. Go cry to your wife. Go cry to your daughter. Go tell your dog your problems.
Well, now I've heard it all. So you think I'm some big crybaby, huh?
Aren't you the kind of... You're always telling about the bad economy this and the bad economy that. We got too many people yakking about the economy. Get out and do some work. I don't care how you do it. I don't care whether you got a... If you got to start a lemonade stand, then start a lemonade stand. Quit with your belly aching about how the economy sucks.
Well, it does. The economy is lousy. It's in the tank. And you want to know why? Obama, that's why.
Oh, get out of here, will you?
Man, I told you, cut that guy off.
Whether Obama's the problem or not, it ain't going to get any better. Look, let me tell you something. Obama could get bounced. We got a new president. And that doesn't necessarily mean you're going to get a job or any better job or have any more money. It doesn't necessarily mean anything other than we're going to get a new president. You know? What if we get a new president and people don't necessarily get more work? And or let's put it another way, and this is probably a more devastating piece of news. What if we get a new president and the country goes back to work? Everybody goes back to work except, you know, you. Like the guy said, they're going, what's wrong with me? Well, maybe all those people were right. Maybe you're just a real pain in the ass, man. Maybe nobody likes to work with you. That could be the case, too. But I'll tell you something, you know.
Did you talk about how what your dad said?
Well, I don't like to quote my dad because I can tell you something right now. My father, you know, there was a lot wrong with that man. But I'm sure he didn't say anything different than a lot of fathers of his generation, which was basically the following thing. I don't care what's wrong with the economy. I don't care whether you got a pain in the ass or a headache or whatever your problem is. Get your ass out of bed and go to work. You know, that's somebody else's problem. Well, I don't know, the economy's really bad. Well, the economy's bad, go out and make the economy good, you know? You remember those days, our grandparents used to talk like that? What the hell happened to this country? It isn't that this is a generation of lazy people. I'm not saying that. We're not a generation of substandard human beings. We got all that it takes. We're Americans. We're inheritors of that great spirit. But the one thing that we seem to be doing here, we give ourselves a lot of excuses to stink. We give ourselves all kinds of excuses to suck. We got more excuses in this country these days to stink the joint out. So we say, well, I can go out and kick ass, but I need a new president, and then I need this, and then I need that, and then I need something else, and then I got to have this, and I got to have that. It isn't like we don't need a lot of things changed in this country. I'm not saying that. But they shouldn't be used as excuses not to get out and kick a little bit of ass in this world, and that's what we do. Sure, we need a new president or we don't. I don't know. Sure, we need health care or we don't. I don't know. Sure, there's a lot of things that we need, right? But you can't use those as excuses for not going out and getting the damn job done somehow. God!
Well, I'll tell you, man, a lot of people ought to take that advice, you know.
Yeah, well, David Hogg, yay! You ought to run for president.
He was being sarcastic. All right, we're going to come back here on a world-famous Phil Henry show. We have Gene DiCarta. Mr. DiCarta, is he related to Vernon Dozier, the high school teacher?
Yeah, brother-in-law.
Mr. DiCarta is Vernon Dozier's brother-in-law. We're going to talk with him in a moment. He's also an educator, albeit retired, about the forthcoming election, about the Republican National Convention. Actually, he's going to talk a little bit about Hurricane Isaac, too, and how that relates to the modern political scene. That ought to be interesting. It's coming up here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. We're live online at philhenryshow.com. Our video cast every single night at philhenryshow.com. Get a backstage pass. Go look at it. Go dig it. Go love it. Get all over it. Climb on top of it. It's there for you. We'll be right back.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Henry
right
Show.
Then we won't be right back. You mean we're not right back?
You want them to be right back?
You're listening to the world famous Phil Henry Show.
And welcome back to the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Our number is 877-876-7445, 877-876-PHIL. And to the extent that we can keep you up to date and abreast of what is happening in the Gulf states or along the Gulf Coast with Hurricane Isaac this evening, we will do that. On Phil TV and HD, we have endeavored to at least give you some graphic look, but some look at what the network coverage is. And we do see some significant, you know, wave and wind action there in the Gulf. Various and sundry important people, politicians, leaders of the community there are being interviewed. So it's an effort that we will try to stay abreast of. Our number is 877. What are you looking? What is it, bud?
I don't understand what you said.
What didn't you understand?
Talking about the thing, man.
Hold on, Robert. I'll do it. What didn't you understand?
But you're all like going, and this evening we'll have the thing. I don't know what you said.
What the hell are you talking about?
Talking about doing Hurricane Isaac, man.
What do you mean doing Hurricane Isaac?
I'm talking about when we have on the TV, maybe we'll show, you know.
What?
Yeah, I don't understand that either.
What I'm saying is that as the night progresses, we're going to try to have some of the TV coverage of the hurricane thing, of the thing. Do you dig, man? I don't want to go into a whole long thing, okay?
All right, now see that, I understood.
Of course. All right, on the line with us here is Gene DiCarta. Gene is the cousin of, he's the brother-in-law of Vernon Dozier, who's a high school teacher. Gene, you were a teacher at Pierce College, right?
Teacher at Pierce College, yeah.
How long?
Well, I was a teacher at Pierce College for two different periods of time. I was there from the late 1970s to the late 1980s, and then I was there from around 1995 to 2005. So I took a brief sabbatical and went to Australia and did some firefighting in Australia, Phil, and then came back and taught again.
What did you teach?
Well, I taught chemistry, I taught science, but basically in our bioscience department, and I taught some chemistry and headed the department briefly at Pierce. Not for very long, but long enough, you know, to realize that I liked it, but I had to take a time off from it.
Gene, you've been watching the Hurricane Isaac coverage, and you've also had a bit of a political epiphany there as you've been sitting and watching this hurricane coverage. What was that?
Well, I don't claim this to be a feeling that people should have. I don't claim it a healthy feeling at all, but I'm like a lot of Americans, frustrated as heck over the last 4 years that we've spent in this country trying to get things straightened out, and the leadership in this country has been, it's just been substandard, to put it in the most respectful terms. It's just been a substandard kind of leadership in America. So I've tried to, you know, be forgiving, I guess, in my own mind that way. But I was watching the Hurricane Isaac coverage tonight from the Gulf, and I was watching CNN. I had it on CNN. And I saw Anderson Cooper, and I think that of all the reporters on CNN, Anderson Cooper represents the CNN editorial policy and the CNN approach to news better than anybody. I think in a lot of ways you could say that he's the face, you know, of CNN.
Well, he's one of the more popular personalities, I guess.
I think so. Him and maybe Piers Morgan, although I think a lot of people don't like him. But
no, I wouldn't say Piers Morgan is necessary. I don't think he has yet endeared himself to the CNN audience. But definitely Anderson Cooper represents the brand, if you will.
Right. Yeah, I believe so, Bill. And that's what struck me tonight as I was watching him on television, and he was doing his reporting from the Gulf State, and he was leaning into the wind for all of its dramatic purpose. There's just a part of me that's never going to believe a guy like Anderson Cooper when he's leaning into the wind and he's making those faces grimacing against the you know, the difficulty of the story and the conditions, kind of like when he was down in Egypt. There's a part of me that's never going to believe Anderson Cooper, and that may be because of the network he works for. I don't know, but there's just a part of me that's not going to believe that guy. And I had a sense tonight that disappointed me personally, because no matter how much I may disagree with anyone, I never take it to a place where I wish something ill upon that person. And yet tonight I became so frustrated and so tired of looking at Anderson Cooper and CNN and their so-called news. And you pointed out very well, Phil, the Anderson Cooper in Haiti, and I thought the...
He definitely was going for effect there. He wasn't really covering... He wasn't doing much news reporting.
No, he was not doing much news reporting, but I was disappointed in myself tonight as I watched Anderson Cooper leaning into the wind and grimacing and getting all of the accolades and the kudos from his people back in the studio. And I found myself... This was very unusual for me to be thinking this, but I found myself wishing that in a hurricane, you know, Phil, a lot of things get loose and a lot of things are picked up and carried along in the wind. And I found myself, and God forgive me, hoping for some kind of a steel sign or a road sign or something that had come loose from the post to suddenly come very quickly in from off camera and batter him a little bit, hit him in the head with it, and then fly away and maybe knock him over. I surprised myself with that thought. I couldn't believe that I was thinking what I was thinking.
You wanted a metal sign to hit him and knock him down and injure him.
I did, yeah. Yeah, and... you know, my wife Karen was in the room. She said, you know, if you think that those metal signs, Jane, can come flying in and decapitate a man. I said, my God, I didn't think about that, but it's true. You know, the sign can come in from off of the camera and can come in at almost like a
well, it's going to slice through the wind parallel to the ground, yeah.
I could not believe myself thinking a thought like that. I thought, and I asked her, I said, do you mean decapitation? She said, yes. And I thought, my God, you know, I couldn't believe what I had come up with that. But that's what CNN and that's what Anderson Cooper, and I guess in a lot of ways, that's what I, in my own way, the three of us, you put the three of us together, and that's what we come up with. We come up with Gene DiCarta wanting to see Anderson Cooper decapitated by a hurricane-driven, hurricane wind-driven metal sign. And I was very disappointed in myself.
All right, hold the line here. Gene DeCarta, a professor of chemistry, retired from Pierce College, Los Angeles, talking about the coverage of the hurricane by CNN. We're going to come back. Your phone calls and thoughts as well. 877-876-PHIL.
Phil Hendry.
Woo! The world-famous Phil Hendry Show. With me is Gene DeCarta. He's a retired professor of biochemistry and chemistry at Pierce College. We'll take some of your phone calls as well as at 877-876-7445. We're talking with Gene, though, about his reaction to the hurricane coverage on CNN, and it was your feeling that it was your feeling that watching Anderson Cooper there and the politics of CNN, you wanted to see Anderson Cooper injured by a flying piece of debris.
I did, and I don't usually expect that kind of behavior, that thinking process from myself.
And CNN's coverage, obviously, their coverage of news in general is a bit too liberal for you.
It's always been too liberal for me. I've never been a person who, thought that CNN was anything other than a major network cable news mouthpiece for the liberal agenda in this country and the so-called progressive agenda, if you can call it progressive. I can't. I think that's a joke. But listening to them editorialize the way they did, and then to see Anderson Cooper, I suddenly it all came together inside of me, and I wanted to see him get hit with a metal sign that had come loose from the post, and I wanted to see it hit him, and I wanted to see it injure him in no uncertain terms, and that was shocking for me. I have to be honest with you, and especially when my wife brought up the fact that that could easily decapitate him. I have to tell you.
What about that was shocking for you? I mean, you.
I've never wanted anything bad to happen to anybody. I mean, if I disagree with him politically, but I thought it was a great opportunity to. To see him. It would have been pretty funny, you know.
What if he gotten his head cut off, like you were saying?
He's asking about what if he got decapitated. My wife is saying, yeah, and you know, I can't keep talking about this, Phil, because there's part of me that is shocked about the way I'm thinking, the way my wife is thinking. Part of me is, I'm laughing, you know.
So it would be funny to you if Anderson Cooper was decapitated by a flying piece of metal debris.
I guess so. I have to ask myself why, but...
Does that bother you or disturb you about yourself?
No, it doesn't, because I think it's a normal feeling. You know what I mean? By that, I mean, we're irritated by a lot of people that we see on TV. But, I mean, I've never wished ill on anybody, like I said, but to see a flying metal sign decapitate Anderson Cooper in the middle of a hurricane is almost funny if you think about it this way. That's not supposed to happen. He's on television. He's doing a TV news report. And he's also this very well-known liberal reporter. And I hate the liberal message. I don't hate liberals. I just hate the liberal message. And there he is standing there talking about weather like he's just Mr. CNN, and he gets his head just cut clean off. What? Yeah, my wife she's still shrugging her shoulders going, so?
All right, let me talk to R.C. Collins from Alhambra. R.C., how you doing tonight?
Real good, Mr. Henry. I was listening to your guest, Mr. DeCarta.
Yes, sir.
Mr. DeCarta, are you aware that the Hurricane Katrina was on this date in the 2005, in 2005, did you wear that?
Yeah, I was. I was aware of that, R.C.
Are you aware that in that hurricane, people were flooded out and died and then got flooded out?
I was very much so.
Well, I mean, you think that that's to be laughed about and everything?
Right, I don't think it's to be laughed about. I'm not laughing about that. I'm not laughing about that.
And yet you want to see Anderson Cooper be decapitated, or however you said it.
Decapitated?
Yeah, to be decapitated, and yet you want to see that.
Yeah, I didn't say I wanted to see him flooded out, you know.
Well, but okay, you got me there, but...
Well, I mean, but your point is that there was a lot of loss of life.
Yeah, there was a lot of loss of life in the 2005 Hurricane Katrina.
Yes, R.C., I understand that, and I like all other Americans, was very shocked and upset by that. I was upset by that, but I guess it's just the fact that I hate liberals. I hate liberals, you know.
Well, you said you did. But you said you didn't hate liberals, just the liberal message.
Yeah, but I hate liberals, too.
Yeah, but you let that hatred of liberals go to a point where you want to see Anderson Cooper decapitated by a flying metal sign standing there reporting on the hurricane.
Yeah, see, that's the thing that I'm thinking about.
Could you turn your radio down, R.C.?
What?
Could you turn your radio down?
Yeah, but I'm watching. I'm turning the radio. I'm in the back seat right now.
Okay, have whoever is in the front seat.
Watch, turn the radio down.
What?
Turn the radio down. So you think that being that this is a different hurricane, it doesn't matter?
Would you turn the radio down?
Yeah, it's...
Hey, Watson, turn the radio down. Turn it down, man.
What?
Turn it down.
I couldn't hear the young man at all.
I said, so you think this being a different hurricane, it don't matter then?
No, I'm not saying that it don't matter. I don't want to see anybody hurt. My instinct about Anderson Cooper was that I saw him standing there by himself, and the wind was blowing on him and the rain, but I knew that he had a nice truck to get into, and he was going to be nice and warm, and he was just standing out there in the wind and the rain for effect, and I knew that that's what's going on, and that's why I thought, you know, I'd love to see his world get rocked a little bit. And I thought a flying, like, stop sign, something that came loose like a yield sign coming through the air and hitting him. It doesn't have to decapitate him. You know
what is that word?
Decapitate.
What you said? Decapitate.
Decapitate.
Decapitate. I apologize. Decapitate. Okay, I got that word. Decapitate.
All right. Well, I appreciate your comments here, Gene. But I think what you're essentially saying is, it was just an instinct you had. That seeing Anderson Cooper there, the face of a liberal television network, what a nice opportunity it would be for him to get hit with a metal sign. I don't think you want him to be decapitated, but it would have been sort of funny anyway.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, see, I think that's pretty sick, because you may think it's funny and everything, but still, he'd die, you know?
I know he would, and I'd be sorry for that.
But you'd still laugh at it.
I would. I have to be honest.
See, that's way sicker than a lot of stuff I've said on your show, Mr. Henry, and yet you still have him on the radio. And
look, at R.C., I don't remember every little thing that you've said on my show, okay? If you've said things as sick as what I just heard this man say, then yes, I've probably hung up on you.
What did I say?
Well, you're essentially endorsing, you're essentially saying it would be pretty amusing. You don't want it to happen to the guy. It'd be pretty amusing to have him lose his head.
Yeah, so why does he get to stay on?
Because, to be honest with you, he's an invited guest. He's not just a caller, and I have a tendency to keep those people on longer. But I am going to take this opportunity to say goodbye to both of you. And R.C., thanks for calling.
Well, can I... See, I don't think it's fair that... Turn it down, Watson.
What?
I don't think it's fair that you hang up on me and you let him be on.
Because you're not the guest. He is.
See, I'm the guest.
Well,
okay, thank you very much. Nice talking to you. R.C. Collins on the line with us here. On the line also from the Valley is Mr. Gene DiCarta. And, Gene, we're going to say goodnight to you.
Did I go over the line? Did I go over the line?
Did you go over the line?
Yeah.
No, you didn't go over the line. It's nothing weirder, I don't think, than a lot of things we've heard on our show. It's a little disturbing.
Yeah, I thought maybe I went over the line with my comments.
I think you laughing your way through these things about decapitating a guy with a metal sign by hurricane-strength winds or being hit with a sign, I think it's already a strange idea, you know?
Yeah, you think so?
Yeah, I do.
All right, I said I didn't really want it to happen, you know?
No, I understand that. It's a fantasy or it's some kind of instinct you have that you'd like to see that, but still, it's still and all to express something like that is pretty disturbing. I thank you very much, Mr. DiCarta, for being with us. Gene DiCarta.
All right, Phil, I apologize. My wife put me up to a lot of it, huh? My wife put me up to a lot of it.
Well, are you telling me the truth?
Yeah, I'm telling you the truth, but my wife put me up a lot of it. But anyway, Phil, thank you very much. And
all right, thank you, and say hello to Vernon for us.
Say that?
Say hello to Vernon for us?
I will, Phil, I will very much, yeah.
Gene DiCarta, who wanted to, briefly see a metal sign fly through the screen there as Anderson Cooper was doing his reporting.
Yeah, he said he wanted to see him decapitated. You think that, what thing would happen if they did that?
What do I think would happen if they did, what do you mean they did that?
I mean, if that happened.
Well, if it happened, they'd probably go to black, man. They'd probably go to another.
Yeah, they'd go to commercial or something. Yeah?
Yeah, they'd go to, they would definitely not stay, they would, if something flew through the air and cut Anderson Cooper's head off, my God, the shock and the horror of that would reverberate throughout television history. Not to mention it would be the major news story of the next, God knows, few weeks. And I'm sure that they would immediately cut from that camera to some other scene.
Think they'd keep on doing the hurricane coverage and everything?
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, no, I don't. I think that they would immediately switch to covering that. That would be the main focus of their coverage.
What about like Fox and everything?
What about Fox what?
Would Fox cover the decapitation?
Yeah, Fox would cover the decapitation too, yeah. I don't know what you guys are asking me now, man. Are you asking me just how far, how big?
No, I'm wondering if Anderson Cooper got his head cut off.
I don't know, man, but I would imagine it would become the major story on all the networks. Yeah, it would. It would, yes, it would eclipse the hurricane.
See, that to me, that I just can't feature that. That's, even though it's Anderson Cooper, you know, it just I can't feature it. No, I mean, why make him that important and other people are going to, you know, in a hurricane?
Because it's a bizarre, because that's news, and that's how news is reported, that's how news is collected. It's actually not a very bad question. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a very good question. It's a very good question. And I'm giving you my honest appraisal. If Anderson Cooper stood there on television and a metal sign flew through the air as the result of it coming unhinged from a post and cut his head off right in front of the whole television viewing public, it would become the major story of the news cycle, and it would last for several days. It would eclipse the news of the hurricane. And is that right or is that wrong? I would have to say it's probably, in terms of its relative importance, it's probably wrong. But then who am I to say what's important?
Yeah, you just said it's wrong. That would see a lot of people be pissed off.
No, I know a lot of people would be pissed off. That's, our values are already so twisted by the hyper-focus that television and news media gives things, we have a lens that we all look through. And the lens that we all look through is out of focus. If you have a camera and you aim that camera at something, you try to get it into focus. Ideally, what you want to have the camera aiming at is that thing which is going to be the subject of your photograph. And what should be the subject of your photograph? Well, it should be that which is the center of the picture. That which is the most important part of that picture. Whatever that may be. And if you're not focused on that, If you're focused on a blade of grass that's just ahead of it, if you're focused on a lighthouse that's just behind it, if you're focused on a person that is somehow not in, the same, is not spatially related to that thing, then you are out of focus. And if you're saying to yourself, it is a far more important thing to think about, to concentrate on, and to pay attention to that Anderson Cooper got his head cut off by a flying sign in a hurricane, which it didn't happen, folks. We're just, you know, speculating here, as we like to say.
Yeah, well, okay, what if I did?
Then I'm saying your camera, if you will, your figurative camera, is out of focus, man. Your camera is out of focus. You're not focusing on the right thing.
You know how many people think Anderson Cooper is... People like him, man. And they dig everything he do. You know?
Well, okay. So what? If it's more important to you to hear the news of Anderson Cooper, that's fine. But if everybody in America, and possibly the world, if all of a sudden the preponderance of interest in what is happening down in the Gulf states is Anderson Cooper and not the hurricane itself, something's wrong.
Think so?
Yeah, I know so. Something's wrong. I can't quite tell you what it is. But if it's one or two people, I get it. If it's maybe the Anderson Cooper fan club, I get it. If it's Anderson Cooper's family, I certainly get it. But if it becomes the point of focus, there's something wrong with what we're doing, man. That's all I can tell you, you know?
Yeah, you can't say what it is.
I can't say what it is. All I can tell you is there's something damn wrong with what we're doing. All right, we're going to take a break. I just heard my engineer.
That was Dan Northcraft that said it.
Dan Northcraft. 877-876-7445. World famous Phil Henry Show. Be right back after these very important messages from
Truth
our sponsors.
Truth is our bitch. Ooh. The Phil Henry Show.
Yeah, man. Anderson Cooper.
Anderson Cooper, there's a lot of stuff that he's going to say.
Phil, 877-876-7445. I appreciate the gentleman who just called and alerted us to the story about Ellen Barkin. You'll forgive me, I wasn't completely up on this one, but I am now. The Hollywood actress, Ellen Barkin, who you know from such films as Bob's Leg. I don't know. Do you know any?
No, I don't know, man.
Was she in a movie called Bob Leg?
Bob Leg? I said Bob's Leg.
Well, it doesn't matter, man. It doesn't exist.
Well, that's true, but no, she wasn't. I'm sorry, Ms. Barkin, I can remember. She's 58. Wow. Ms. Barkin, you look much younger.
Yeah, Ms. Barkin.
You do. Anyway, and you know Ellen Barkin. She's been in some great films, and she is a Hollywood actress who's come under fire for apparently saying she hoped Republicans would be drowned by Hurricane Isaac. The violent storm, which made landfall in Louisiana on Tuesday night, was previously feared to be heading for the GOP convention in Tampa, Florida. And sitcom star Ellen Barkin caused controversy when she appeared to endorse a tweet saying that the delegates should be swept right into the ocean. The 58-year-old actress who appears in the controversial upcoming sitcom, The New Normal. What's controversial about it? Is it because it's a ripoff on Modern Family? Oh! I don't know whether it is or not, but in any event, The New Normal is a prolific Twitter user, frequently sending out fiery left-wing views, or, as they call them, tweets or tweebs.
They ain't called tweeb, is it?
No, I just made that up. On Monday afternoon, Ms. Barkin retweeted a message sent to her by another user saying, "Come on, Isaac, wash every pro-life, anti-education, anti-woman, xenophobic, gay-bashing, racist SOB right into the ocean. #RNC. The first day of the Republican National Convention was canceled due to the threat posed by Isaac, which has brought high winds and storms to the entire Gulf region. The hurricane reached land the next day on the 7th anniversary of Hurricane Katrina. So I think what the gentleman was saying, who called us, you were right, sir. It did have something to do. I thought it simply, I heard what Gene was saying as simply saying, what's the more important... Actually, that's what we were saying.
Yeah, you misinterpreted the man.
Absolutely right. I misinterpreted you, sir. What I thought you meant was you were referring to the comparison between Anderson Cooper getting decapitated by a metal sign and the overall coverage of Hurricane Isaac. But in point of fact, what you're talking about is there anything, what's worse, what Mr. DeCarta said about Anderson Cooper getting decapitated with a sign and what Ellen Barkin said about the whole RNC? Aren't they equally bad? And the answer, I guess, would have to be yes. Did you think?
I don't know now. See, I've got me confused.
All right, well, 877-876-7445. We're going to get on the line here. We do have Dean Wheeler on the line with us from Northern California, who has been following the events of the Republican National Convention. As you get ready, Dean, I know, to head to Chicago for the Republican, the Democratic National Convention. How do you read that, Dean?
What I heard said on your program, I have to agree with the caller.
Can you hold on? Because we're going into a break.
Oh, come on.
We're going into a break, okay?
You know what? Forget it.
Did he hang up?
Yeah.
Okay, well, all right. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
I mean, every time you do it to me, you don't do it to anybody else.
I thought you hung up.
I did. But I called back. So why do you do that?
Woo-hoo. Phil Hendry.
Come on!
Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico.
I'd love to see
Phil Hendry.
All right. Back on the line here, it is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, and we do have Dean Wheeler on the line with us from Northern California, from Novato. And you did not mind at all that we put the phone call back in to Mr. DeCarta, so we did. Gene, how are you doing?
I'm great, thank you.
And Dean, you're there, right?
I am, Phil. I've been here for the last 7 minutes, and I apologize for making an issue of you cutting me off, but my understanding was I was going to be on for the segment.
Well, and I'm sorry, we brought you on too early. The segment is this segment. We brought you on before the news.
And that is my understanding. I apologize.
You don't have anything to apologize for. And, Gene, we brought you back on because the comment is as follows. You talking about Anderson Cooper getting hit with a metal sign. No, he wasn't, folks. I want everybody to know that that didn't happen. This is the fantasy you had.
I don't want to make a as I said, I don't want that to happen, but I had a fantasy about that. And I, because of his liberal views and because of the liberal views of his network, I fantasized that I hope I'd see a metal sign flying through the shot, as they call it in television, and the metal sign would fly through the shot and would hit him or slice, his head off.
God almighty.
All right, well, Dean, we'll get to you in a minute.
Well, I said I didn't want it to happen, sir.
God almighty.
We'll get to you in a minute, Dean.
I understand.
That was not anything I wanted to see happen.
Oh, God.
As I said, sir, it's not anything I wanted to see happen, but I've made the comment because I was tired of his liberalism.
All right, Dean, you had an observation on all of this.
I did have an observation because the exact same instinct happened to me as I was watching Fox. See, this is what I mean. That's why I didn't want to bring it up.
Well, allow me to finish what I'm going to say. I saw the reporter on Fox. I don't know what his name is, but he was battling these winds, standing in the middle of the street, trying to maintain his balance, trying to maintain this upright position in the shot. And all I could think about was this prayer. It was almost like a prayer. I can't call it anything else. That's sick to me.
Why is that sick? I think when you invoke God
it was a prayer, but let me finish. It was a prayer that I didn't even know I was uttering. It was a prayer that he would lose his balance and get picked up and slammed into the plate glass of a storefront.
I never wanted that to happen to Anderson Cooper, Phil.
I think you did when you said you wanted to see the sign slice through his neck.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Well, you know, my wife is the one that brought that up.
Well, your wife brought it up, but you endorsed it with your laughter. I heard you laughing.
I don't think so. I think what I said...
Yes, you did. I heard you laughing.
Well, what I said was this. I said to Karen, oh, my God, I didn't think that was a very pleasant thought. But I said, she said to me, it's likely to happen because the sign gets parallel to the ground and becomes this slicing machine.
Yeah, and I can't for the life of me understand how you don't see that as equally... If you are condemning what I'm saying, and I said to you that mine was an instinct that was not conscious, mine wasn't either.
But see, both of you guys are saying that you're neither one of you meant to think what you were thinking. And that's the problem that I have with both of you. I think you have to drop that. I think you might as well just cop to, you know, the belief that this was something that was...
No, I swear to God, it was not something that I wanted to... I didn't sit down and say, I really want to see this happen to him. It came into my mind when I saw how tough that wind looked.
And it was the same with me. But if... Can I make this point? Now, here is the gentleman that I'm looking at on CNN. He's wearing a green slicker. It's actually a female. And they've got her standing with a live mic. She is battling the wind. At any moment, she is going to be carried away by that wind. I can see her turning her head to the left. She's now ducking her head down. She's trying to crouch into a, if you will, a smaller target so the wind doesn't have as much to catch a hold of. And eventually, and again, it was by instinct, pick her up and slam her into a storefront with a lot of glass.
You don't call that a sick instinct.
I didn't say that. I said, as you said, it was not something that I planned out. It just came to me.
All right. I think you guys need to drop that. Okay? And I'll tell you why. In your case, Dean, there's it's very specific what you're saying.
It is. Very much so.
What do you mean?
You're saying, you're looking at this woman and you're saying, oh, I want the wind to pick her up and slam her into a glass.
All right, when does the audience say, Mr. Henry's laughing, this must be some kind of comedy sketch? When does the audience say that?
I don't think it's a comedy sketch. I think probably Phil is in disbelief.
Well, I have to be honest with you. The specificity that you're lending to what you're saying, Dean, is slightly comedic. Yeah.
I think it's probably hysterical shock, though, in a lot of ways.
No, I don't agree with that.
All right, let me just tell you. You're talking about the woman getting picked up and slammed into a plate glass window, and you, Mr. DeCarta, you're talking about Anderson Cooper having his head sliced off with a flying metal sign. Both of you guys have lent a specificity to your thought or your fantasy, if you want to call it that, that I think puts a lie to the claim it was just an instinct that just came out of me. I didn't know where it came from. I think both of you guys gave it some thought. Our number, 877-876-7445. Here on the Phil Henry Show, I'm talking here with Gene DeCarta and with Dean Wheeler. Margaret Gray on the line with us from Santa Monica. Go ahead, Margaret. Okay, is Margaret there?
Yeah.
Go ahead, Margaret.
No, I'm listening to the two men right now, and I am really sickened by what I'm hearing. To hear Anderson Cooper spoken of as if he is something that we can watch on television to be slaughtered. Because I think the man there, Mr. DeCarta?
Yeah, this is Gene DeCarta.
I'm a journalist, sir, and I write a column for a large national syndicate. And I'm not saying I'm going to write an article or a column about your observations or Mr. Wheeler's, but I am sickened by the notion that Anderson Cooper is slaughtered on television for your amusement.
What about what this man said?
Well, I'll get to what Mr. Wheeler said, but Anderson Cooper's a very well-known man. Now, who are you talking about, Mr. Wheeler?
I'm talking about whoever it is that's on Fox.
Who specifically, though?
Yeah, who is the reporter?
I don't know. A female in a green slicker. All right, so he is not lending specificity to what he's saying. She is an anemone. or an anonymity. I don't know how to say it.
An anonymity.
An anonymity, yes. And
does that make what I said worse?
It does, because what you're saying is this man, this icon, Anderson Cooper, ha, 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 he's slaughtered like an animal. Mr. Wheeler is saying this person, this individual, some woman in a green slicker, ha, 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 she's lifted up about 3 feet off the ground and then flies backwards in a standing position, but she's up off the ground and flying, still holding the microphone, correct?
Yes, that's how I see it, yeah.
All right. And then slams into a plate glass window?
Well, a glass storefront.
A glass storefront.
Why is that I don't understand why that's not just as bad.
I don't either.
Because, and I'll say it again, if I have to repeat it another few times, I will. It's all right. I've got time. There is the...
I know what you're... She doesn't have a name.
Mr. Henry, I was about to say something, and as soon as I was going to save you... I don't... Did you hear what you just did?
I did, Margaret. I thought it was a bit abrupt, Phil.
What was abrupt? I know what you're going to say. You're going to say because she's anonymous.
Can I say it?
You can. This is Gene DeCarta, Ms. Gray. I don't mean to be rude. You can say it. I think we all know what you're going to say.
Well, you all know what I'm going to say now because Henry said it. I was going to say yes. It is not as bad because there is an anonymity to that.
There's an anonymity to it, and yet I heard you and Mr. Wheeler say you can envision this woman being lifted up off the ground by the hurricane winds, thrown back through the air, still in a standing position and holding the microphone, and then slammed into a glass storefront.
Yes.
And with all of that detail, you don't find it as gruesome as the concept of Anderson Cooper being beheaded by a flying stop sign.
Phil, can I say? Go ahead.
I really don't, Phil. I really don't. I don't think it's as bad. I think you're talking about a real man who we just saw on the Gloria Vanderbilt show, or it must be the other way around.
It was his show. He had his mother on.
Okay. I thought I saw him on the Gloria Vanderbilt show, but I guess I'm wrong.
There is no Gloria Vanderbilt show, no.
All right. But we just saw this man, someone that we respect, someone that we admire, and to imagine him having his head sliced clean off.
Oh, God. That's why I was sick and fell.
Well, all right. We'll take a break right now on the Phil Hendry Show.
This is what I mean. Every time I get on a roll.
You're not on a roll. I already get to... What do you mean? Every time you're on a roll.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Are you laughing at me? I think that is very rude.
Mr. Henry's making a good point here. He has to break. And
what broadcasting school did you go to?
Hold on. Just everybody. 877. When I get on a roll. 877-876-7445. You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. We are trying to do some Gulf storm coverage tonight. We are certainly going to be mindful of any news that breaks from the Gulf Coast having to do with serious injury, or, God forbid, any fatality, and we are very, very much mindful of that as we speak here to Margaret Gray, as well as Dean Wheeler and others, about some whack political fantasy these people are having in the midst of this terribly stressing situation in New Orleans and elsewhere on the Gulf Coast. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show will be right back.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
That went on forever and ever. We're going to be on the air here, whatever it is, you know.
I ain't telling that.
This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
And welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. This evening on the line with me is not only Margaret Gray and Dean Wheeler, as well as Gene DeCarta, talking about the news coverage of the hurricane this evening and the political, if you will, some of the political message that can be read into it. Although, truth be told, and Bob Bakian is also going to join us, by the way, from New Orleans in just a moment. The truth be told, Margaret and Gene, and as well as our good friend Dean Wheeler, the truth be told, you know, you guys are the ones that are reading the political message into this.
Phil, this is Dean. Can I take that?
Go ahead.
I'd like to make a comment on that, too, Phil.
Okay, Dean's going to talk.
Well, he said that I'm going to take it and then you. Okay, all right, I'm sorry. My feeling is that I didn't read anything into the coverage so much as I had an instinct. Now, I know that you're not buying the instinct argument. You think that I conceptualized and really brought to the air a fully formed, fully realized desire to see the news reporter here on Fox lifted from the ground and literally carried away by the winds of this hurricane until I still don't know whether it's a he or a she. I'm not trying to be funny when I say a he she because it's very possible, you know.
I was going to say that, yeah.
What do you mean?
Well, it's possible. Oh, I think you are trying to be funny.
Let's get serious, okay?
All right, I just...
No, I think it's entirely possible that... You know, we do live in an enlightened age. We do have transgender issues. That's all I'm saying.
It's possible what?
I think they're saying that it's possible the reporter's a he-she. I only said this because I don't know the sex of the reporter.
No, I understand that, Dean. I'm on your side on this. But I do agree with Mr. DiCarta.
The point is, if you want to talk about the issues of transgender politics, I'm trying to be liberal here, and I'm a conservative, but if it's a he-she... that you want to see picked up and blown, and again, there's a you know, 50-cent word right there that's going to get you into trouble. And
I didn't use that word in that sense.
There's no, you know, guys are getting way off the point here.
Yeah, all I wanted to say was, from the standpoint that this was a fully conceptualized, fully formed idea, that I wanted to see the he she, whoever the reporter is. My God, I can't believe you. Don't get bogged down in it.
Again, if I'm the most liberal person on this topic and I'm a conservative...
No, all right, fine. The he or the she or the he-she that is the reporter, if you're saying that was a fully conceptualized idea and that I wanted them lifted off the ground by hurricane-force winds and driven into a plate glass window, don't you think I could have lent more specificity to it? For instance, I could say they could be lifted off the ground and flown through the air by the hurricane force winds head first, so that they went through a plate glass window with shards of glass like sabers, like large knives, and that they are driven head first like a spear through that window. There'd be nothing left. There certainly would be nothing left of the head. Don't you think I could lend that kind of specificity to it?
I don't know. I think it depends on how disturbed someone is. You know,
well, that's easy for you to say.
I should say so. Well,
that is easy for you to say. You're the one that said you wanted to see this guy, whoever. I love it. His name's what?
Anderson Cooper.
Yes, I know Anderson. Anderson Cooper. I'm sorry, but I got sidetracked. That's easy for you to say. You just said you wanted to see Anderson Cooper's head taken clean off. So I don't get it.
All right. Let me now get Bob Bakian on the line here. He has a report to do from the ground, boots on the ground in the city of New Orleans tonight. Bob Bakian reporting here on the Phil Henry Show. Bob, go ahead.
Thank you very much, Phil. Bob Bakian here in New Orleans, and we are indeed boots on the ground here tonight, fellas. We're reporting on the storm here in Hurricane Alley, Hurricane Isaac. And we say Hurricane Alley, of course. It seems every single year there is a hurricane threatening this part of the Gulf Coast from the Gulf. As we look at Hurricane Isaac, we are looking at wind speeds of up to 80 miles per hour right now. They are wind gusting up to 100 miles per hour. The eye of the storm field right now is just off the Hurricane Alley coast of New Orleans. And right now, most of the wind and most of the rainfall is happening right there in that concentric area, very, very tight spiral area. You can imagine a football being thrown through the air. That's exactly what a football looks like, and that's exactly what a hurricane looks like in the football. It looks just like a football. And here in the city of New Orleans right now, and I'm standing, Phil, not more than 5 feet away from the Superdome, as this was the site of great relief efforts that were made, some of them very misguided relief efforts during Hurricane Katrina. But right now, what we're feeling is a lot of wind, a lot of rain. Right now, though, the center of the storm is off the coast, but it's very windy.
Okay, I want to ask something, Bob. The hurricane winds in New Orleans, where are they?
They feel like they're here, but they're not. In other words, I'm making it sound as if the hurricane's right here in the city. It's not yet. It's off the coast.
Well, then where? Then don't make it sound like it's in the city.
I want it to be exciting, and I wanted it to be exciting for you, and I wanted it to be exciting for your listeners, but certainly I want to report this as accurately as I possibly can. We had some wind speeds of around 38, gusting to 38 miles an hour here in the city of New Orleans. We've got power outages. Over 310,000 customers are without power in Louisiana. I'm saying Louisiana just to add a bit of a folksy tone to it, Phil.
Yeah, just forget the folksy tone and forget the, because, you know, you can only talk as long as your music's on.
That is right, but I can tell you this, Phil. We are grounded tonight, and behind me is Eric Jeffco. And Eric is my production assistant. He's been carrying a boombox around with him, playing the eyewitness Bob Bakian on the scene news music. So as long as this news is playing, then Bob Bakian is talking. The minute this music stops, then of course I lose my ability to breathe, and generally I lose my ability to think in a coherent way. Bob Bakian reporting here from New Orleans. Right now, Phil, Hurricane Isaac, a Category 1. Isaac has not moved further inland. Additional strengthening is possible as long as it's out in the Gulf, but once it hits the land, Phil, as you know, it starts moving inland, then, of course, the chances are the music stopped.
Okay, see, that happens all the time, and I apologize to my listeners. When Bob Bakian doesn't have his news music, apparently there is some kind of, I don't know what it is.
It's like an epileptic fit, Phil, as I understand it.
An epileptic fit?
Yes. When he doesn't have his news music, then suddenly he sounds like a gibbering imbecile. And that was the word that I got from Dr. Tim Hooton and, of course, your own Dr. Sadler.
All right, Margaret Gray with us. Bob Bakian will be back with more as soon as his news music gets geared up, I guess. From New Orleans. Last we heard from Bob, 80-mile-an-hour winds gusting to 100 miles an hour. It's still off of New Orleans. There is power outage to about 310,000 homes in Louisiana. In the city of New Orleans itself, though, rain is falling and a little windy, but so far, so good. We'll be right back. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show after this.
Phil Hendry.
Shut up, Bob.
Yeah.
Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-7445, the first hour of our program. And really, well into this hour, we've devoted not so much to the Republican convention as we have to situation there in the southeast on the Gulf, the hurricane, as well as the news coverage of the hurricane. Bob Bakian has joined us from the streets of New Orleans, doing some of his reporting, as well as trying to give us a view of things, you know, there ahead of the arrival of the hurricane, which is where everybody is. And Margaret Gray on the line with us as well. We're going to get Mr. DeCarta back, and I think Dean Wheeler as well. Margaret, your view of the news coverage yourself.
Well, as a newswoman, Phil, the first thing that I noticed was that your man, is it Bakian?
Yeah.
I don't know where else he could be. You said he's on the ground there in New Orleans trying to give you a feel for what the hurricane's like, but where else is he going to be?
Well, I mean, you're right. I was referencing the fact the hurricane is still off the coast.
Right, and no one is going to be able to cover the hurricane until it gets into New Orleans. Right now it's off the coast, and unless Mr. Bakian wants to commit suicide in the name of news coverage...
What does that mean?
Well, he'd have to fly his helicopter right into that hurricane to be covering it where it is. You understand what I'm saying?
Margaret, I understand what you're saying. You don't have to give me the whole "to be covering" like I'm stupid. All right?
Well, sometimes I wonder, it's just not you, it's just everyone that I talk to in this so-called world of talk radio. In other words, for him to cover the hurricane, okay?
Okay.
He'd have to be in his helicopter flying right into it. And
that's what I mean. You're right into it. You're not talking to an idiot. I understand what you're saying. And I tell you what, let's get Bob on the phone or on the horn here.
You don't have him on the phone.
No, I got Bob. Are you there?
Phil Bombeki reporting here from New Orleans. I'm listening to Ms. Gray and the comments that she was making. I'd be very happy, Ms. Gray, to get into the Bombeki News Chopper 1 and fly directly into the teeth of this hurricane. That makes you happy right now.
Bob, can I say something? Hello, can I say something?
Go ahead.
All right, I want to say this. Are you there, Mr. Bombeki?
Bombeki can hear you.
All right, No, but he can hear me, right?
Yeah, Bob, you can hear her, right?
Bob, he can.
What is that? That means yes, he can.
Well, then, what do you have the common decency? Bob, can you hear me?
Bob Bacon is listening, yes.
What does that mean, Bob Bacon is listening? I don't understand that.
He's a news reporter, and he says he's listening to you. He's got some quirky stuff. He's very weird.
Boy, you can say that again. Weird. Are you listening to me, sir?
Bob Bacon here, yes. Bob Bacon's listening.
All right, Bob, what I'm saying, I don't want you to make a suicide run and fly your helicopter.
Bob Bacon, Newscopter 1, and Bob Bacon would never fly Newscopter 1 into the teeth of a hurricane, but if Margaret Gray, if you, Ms. Gray, want me to do that, Bob may do.
No, I don't want you to do that. I'm saying, though, you're technically not covering the hurricane until you are there. And why are you doing that?
Bob Bacon's disturbed by the things you're saying.
Well, you can... Come on! What is it with this music?
Bob Bacon can't talk unless he has his news music. That's all I was trying to tell you, Phil. I'm trying to tell Ms. Gray that Bob Bacon would be very happy to fly into the teeth of that hurricane. If, in point of fact, oh, God, please start the music. I can't talk... Yeah, Jesus.
What is going on with the... Are you running out of batteries?
We are running out of batteries. We're running out of battery power. Jim's doing the very best job he can playing it. Put it right up to my ear. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, yeah. Get it right up to my ear. Yeah. Bob Bacon, I feel comfortable now, Phil, and we are here in New Orleans, and it's just a matter of time, Bob, or Phil. Maybe I'm Bob. Maybe you're Bob. But it doesn't make any difference as long as the music plays. That's all I care about. Oh, thank God for the music. Thank God for the music.
I think there's something wrong with this man.
Bob Bacon's not paying attention to you, y'all whore. And I can tell you that...
All right, that's it, man.
Wait, man, it's getting good.
It was getting good? Nope, that's... I don't need any of that. I can tell you right now I don't need any of that stuff. Because, watch this, she's going to... Margaret, I apologize.
I don't know who you think you are, and I don't know what you think you're doing. But whoever that man is, I demand an apology, or you will hear from my attorney 8 o'clock tomorrow morning, very first thing in the morning. Have a very pleasant and productive evening. Thank you so very much, gentlemen. Oh, come on. You think it's funny, huh?
Yeah, I do.
Frank, hang the phone up for me. Damn you to hell. What are you doing, Frank?
I'm hanging the phone up like you said.
I don't think he can do it.
Oh, man.
Just pot it down, bud.
I can't.
What do you mean you can't? Pot it down. Pot it. There you go. Why is it every time they're at home, it sounds like they're out on a freeway or something?
Maybe they live near a freeway.
Maybe they live near a freeway. Well, could be. All right, I don't know really what happened there other than that Bob Bacon, with his news music, apparently was in danger of losing the music, and at the same time...
Yeah, he is getting harassed by Margaret Gray.
Okay, well, that's understandable. Let's get Bob back on the line here so that we can continue with his report from New Orleans. Go ahead, Bob.
Thank you very much, Phil. Bob Bacon here, News Chapter 1. As Bob Bacon is zeroing in here, Hurricane Isaac, until Isaac moves inland further, additional strengthening is possible of Hurricane Isaac. Now, the storm, Phil, as we see about now, is out in the Burris. That's the to the southeast of New Orleans, Burris, Mississippi, coming in across Burris. The eye of the storm is going to be hitting Louisiana. That is the very, very southern portion of Louisiana. Storm surge expect about 6 to 12 feet in Louisiana, Mississippi. The storm strength is a Category 1, Phil. And I mean that it is the least strong of the hurricanes. Sustained winds about 80 miles per hour. The maximum wind gust 105 miles per hour. Right now, Phil, though, the problem is the storm is stationary. But I can tell you something right now, Phil. We've been
70 miles south of New Orleans
at about 900...
Whoa. Hold on for a minute. Hold on.
When I am talking too long, I begin to modulate my voice a little bit like that. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to do that. I was Bob Bacon.
All right, Bob. Thanks very much.
All right.
What's that? Okay. What's that? You want to explain that?
I don't know.
I mean, can we get one guy on this show that doesn't that wasn't born in a mystical land or doesn't have a curse or doesn't have a voice problem or doesn't need music? Can we get one person on this program that doesn't have some idiosyncrasy? I see, I can't even talk good.
Man, I told you I don't like hanging around Margaret.
I've been listening to the people tonight talking and butchering words so effectively, I can't talk gooder anymore. In any event, that was Bob Bacon, and when he gets his voice back so that he's not modulating like a chipmunk, and they get more batteries for the ghetto blaster that Jim Jeffco has is walking around behind him all night long there in New Orleans to play his news music, then maybe we can have a show and at least a report on what is happening in New Orleans that is not fraught with weirdness. Fraught with weirdness, if I'm to be Margaret, if I were to, you know, quote her. Not so much her words, but her manner. All right. Hurricane Isaac with rain and wind. I lived in New Orleans for a very, very brief period of time in my rock and roll radio days. I don't know if I told you guys that.
Uh-oh.
I never told you?
No.
I lived and worked in New Orleans in 1978. And as fate would have it, believe it or not, in this the very brief time that I spent in New Orleans, I was in the middle of a flood. It rained so hard one day in the month of May in 1978 that it flooded the city of New Orleans. So it's the way, it's the geographic, obviously the geographic lay of the land. And the highest point of ground, and these are things that we all learned during Hurricane Katrina, but it's something that bears repeating. The highest point of ground in the city of New Orleans, where do you think that is?
What do you mean?
What's the highest piece of ground in New Orleans? The highest piece of ground?
Well, probably like in a building or something.
No, not the building, man. You know.
Yeah, that'd be the highest piece of ground.
No, that's a structure. I'm talking about ground, land, terra firma. Where is, you don't know, do you?
Uh-uh.
It's the French Quarter. That's where the city was formed. That's the original center of the city of New Orleans. That's where the city started. And obviously, whoever founded the city, the Spanish, the French, and the natives of the area, the Europeans, they decided on the best piece of ground on which they should begin to erect their fortifications in those days, which eventually surrounded the shops and the merchants and wherever they were going to do their farming and so on and so forth. So the highest piece of ground is the French Quarter. And if you remember from Hurricane Katrina, the television shots, the video shots from New Orleans, generally when the shot included the French Quarter, the streets were wet with rain, but they were not flooded. They were not flooded. And if memory serves, they did not get flooded to any great degree. So if you had a home in the French Quarter, and like I was telling you guys during the break, when I first moved there, everybody that I was working with at the radio station, just about everybody lived in the French Quarter. And the station I worked at was in the French Quarter on Bienville Street. So everyone had an apartment or some residence in the quarter. And they were all saying to me, Phil, you really ought to move here because it's close to the station. And it would have been fantastic. I would have been within walking distance of the station. And really, in the French Quarter of New Orleans, it's a community. It's a neighborhood. It has its little entertainment areas there, you know, the Bourbon Street and all that stuff. It has shops. It has grocery stores, churches, places to worship, parks. It's a marvelously contained, very colorful, and really just a great, great piece of American neighborhood life living in the quarter. And I didn't because it was expensive. And what you had to do, if you rented a place in the French Quarter in those days, one of my friends who worked at the station, this guy had rented an apartment there, and he said, yeah, I spent a month shoveling dirt out of the thing. I mean, it came as is. Nobody was cleaning anything up for your ass, you know. You want a place in the quarter? Here it is. And probably back then, and we're talking late 70s, it was probably approaching $1,000 a month. That was a lot of bread in those days. So I decided just...
Yeah, you wound up moving with... You said you lived with a chick or something.
Yeah, I lived with a chick who had a boyfriend, thank you very much, okay? So don't make a big thing out of it.
Yeah, but I bet you didn't try to tap it?
No, I didn't try to tap it, okay? That's the kind of square I am. I was very cool about it. All right, we'll be right back here. didn't try to tap it. We'll be back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show as I look at myself here on the video cast. What's that red thing on my face right there? What is that?
Probably a hickey.
No, it can't be a hickey because I haven't. No girl has kissed me in months, if not years. We'll be right back. World-famous Phil Hendry Show. A hickey.
Truth
just below my
is
eye.
Our
that's,
bitch.
That's good.
The Phil Hendry Show.
Oh, God. Oh, God.
Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, and I'm just sort of messing around with backgrounds here on Phil TV and HD because we are trying to... Well, there is... there it is. Okay. That'll work. What do you think?
Yeah, it looks pretty good right there, man, the thing you have on the thing.
Yeah, it tastes good.
All right. We have camera three, and what we've essentially done is we've got camera three as a backdrop to us here, and I think that'll probably work for the time being. I don't want it to be a distraction... But there it is. Why is that smoke and a lion jumping? Oh, that's a commercial. All right. Welcome back. Our number is 877-876-7445 here, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. And, of course, online at philhendryshow.com, where you are certainly welcome to watch, if you wish, Phil TV in HD. And that's something that we're excited about. It's a facet. It's an offering that we present a video view of our radio show. Now, joining us to talk a little bit about another story that's bizarre, and at the same time, it's an important story to talk about. And when I say bizarre, one would think that of all the professions that exist in this world that would take a great deal of care in protecting its workers from venereal disease, one would think it's the so-called porn or adult film business. And yet that has not been the case. That has, in point of fact, been not the case at all recently because there is, it would seem, a syphilis epidemic or some form of a syphilis outbreak among adult film actors, not only in the city of Los Angeles, where there's a lot of adult film business done, but also in Europe, in the so-called porn capitals of Europe, one of which is Budapest. I believe the others are St. Petersburg, Florida. And the third city, if I'm not mistaken, is Vienna, Austria. I could be wrong. On the line with me is Dr. Jim Sadler, who has spoken with a number of these actors and producers and is trying to get a feel in terms of the health risk to the other performers, get a feel for what exactly is going on. Dr. Sadler, you are a psychologist. You're not a medical doctor. What is your interest in this?
I think, Phil, the interest that I have is pretty basic, and that is the mental health as well as the psychiatric health of adult film actors and what would prompt certain performers to work even though they are physically at risk and or putting other people at risk. These are very important considerations. So while this has to be attacked, this problem has to be attacked on a physical level, on a medical level, and very much so on the medical level, it has to be attacked on a psychological level as well.
All right, joining me here is, as well as Dr. Sadler, is a part-time adult film performer as well as a part-time adult film actor, and that is Chris Norton from Redondo Beach, California. We've talked to Chris many times. Chris, how are you?
Hi, Phil.
Tell me, Chris, about your knowledge, your experience with the information you're getting. What are you hearing concerning this venereal disease problem that's happening in the adult film industry in Southern California and in Europe?
Kind of what I'm hearing more than anything else, Phil, is that actors are being, you know, proactive. They're getting treatment. They're getting, penicillin antibiotic shots to treat it. And also, the problem they're having in Europe as opposed to United States is the treatment in the United States takes maybe 10 days or something, and you can go back to performing. That's what the producers in Los Angeles and elsewhere in the United States generally recommend, where in Europe it takes 30 days to 60 days. And if it's taken any more from 30 to 60 days, then you've got a backlog, if you'll pardon, you know the log is, you know, backed up or whatever. I don't kind of have a porn, I just put a porn, sort of a porn spin on it, but there's a log that, there's a log that's getting, you know, backed way up in there, and I guess, you know, maybe that's good in porn sense, but in a real sense.
I'm not sure I understand.
I'm sorry, I was trying to be too fancy. I'm just saying there's a backlog of production in Europe, and that's because of the fact that you can't go right back to performing right away.
And this is Dr. Sadler, Chris.
Yeah, Doc, how you doing?
I'm doing good. I know Chris, Phil. My wife, Tammy, and I know Chris from the old days.
We sure do.
And I did not anticipate talking to you, but I'm very, very happy to be talking to you.
Where do you know Chris from?
Well,
it's a long story.
It is. It's a long story. But nonetheless, I wanted to ask you, Chris, and I don't think I'm talking out of school, if you don't mind. I know you were treated eventually, right?
I was, I guess.
Well, I can tell the story. You can.
It's kind of getting sidetracked here.
What story are we going to talk about?
Well, I came on the program just to talk about the venereal disease, you know, and the fact that when you work in the adult film business, you are constantly having to get a shot or dealing with, double D. I mean, we call dealing with drip. And that's just a part of it.
As long as you brought that up, I wanted to tell Phil where I met you. And so, Phil, you and your audience can get an idea. My wife, Tammy...
but before you do that, Doc, get an idea of what?
So Phil and his audience can get an idea of what I'm dealing with here as a medical professional and what you not only deal with, but what you did.
See, that, I'm not sure I'm comfortable with that, you know?
Well, I think I didn't know that I was going to be talking to you.
Gentlemen, I'm a little lost here as to what we're talking about.
All right. Well, what we're talking about, Phil, is my wife, Tammy, before I met her, was an adult film performer herself. And
we have to take a break.
You know, I don't know what to say.
What, I just got on.
I know we have to take a break. I'm sorry.
I don't know what to say. I feel raped.
Sorry. We'll bring them back. Don't worry, folks. 877-876-7445. Phil Henry Show. Sorry, I just...
Why can't I
quit crying like Dean Wheeler, all right?
Phil. Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico.
All right, welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Henry Show. We've been trying here on Phil TV and HD this evening to get a variety of shots. We've got pictures coming from our news-gathering televisions here, our TVs, and then we have some shots, some green screen shots, some slide shots, just all kinds of artsy things. So we're doing kind of an artsy thing, right?
Yeah, we're trying to do an artsy thing, but also look at a hurricane.
Yeah, we're trying to get the hurricane news. And to that extent, we had Bob Bakian. And actually, I tell you who we had. We had Bob Bakian is going to be with us a little bit later on. See, I'm going to show people this. Would you please put that on? Look at this. The televisions that we have here, thanks to Time Warner Cable, this is the kind of service you get when you don't necessarily have a commercial line. And the reason why we don't have a commercial line, believe it or not, even though we're in a business area, is because Time Warner Cable does not yet feed this particular area with a business commercial service. And that's pretty whack, you know. pretty whack. So don't tell me, Time Warner Cable, with all of the money that you people have, with all of the infrastructure, with all of the possibility and capability that you have in this new media age that we live in, the fact that you guys are still scratching your asses and sitting around and taking the wax paper off of your ham sandwiches to see what mama made you, and you're not out here doing some work. This is what I'm talking about. This is what I was talking about in the pre-show. Nobody wants to do any work anymore. Get out here and get some lines. Look at that. You see that lousy crap can service that we get? Cutting in and out. Now, it doesn't happen every night, but it happens just often enough if something isn't this, that, or something else. Balanced line, you know what. Boom, boom, bing, bing. And I don't know. There's no excuse for it. I don't care. People talk about Buy American. This is what I'm getting for Buy an American. I only wish the Japanese provided cable service. I only wish the Chinese. I only wish that the Koreans did, or the Russians. Anybody other than Time Warner Cable. How about that? If only you guys would just provide a service that was a reasonable expected service. And all I'm asking for is, because we're in a commercial district here, yes, it's at the beach, so there are businesses that operate close to the ocean, and one would think that you guys would want to have business out here. You'd really want to get established out here because, you know, people like living out here as well as doing business out here. And we would like to have a commercial service available to us as well because we are a commercial enterprise. Now, that's a lot of big words and a lot of probably pretty weird concepts to grab and sort of, you know, ingest. Big TW, but if I see one more of your commercials on television telling about more is better or more better or whatever that boring, I'm going to put a freaking brick through my television next time I see that. Better's more. More is better. What is that?
Yeah, guy goes more better.
More better. What? I don't. Me no sprechen the Deutsch, okay? Speak a little English, baby. All right, so what we had here before we left, and I apologize, Dr. Sadler, I know you were put out with that, but we had to go to commercial break, is Dr. Jim Sadler. We also have Chris Norton on the line with us as we talk about the outbreak, the epidemic of venereal disease, which is happening in parts of the porn or the adult film business. And so that's really what we're discussing here. On the line with me is... Dr. Jim Sadler. Dr. Sadler, how are you doing? Yes, that's the shot that I wanted, bud.
Yeah, you want one there of the thing.
I'm doing good, Phil.
Yes, Dr. Sadler, good to talk with you.
You want that one, right?
Yeah, I want that one, if you can just move it down.
I'm doing good, Phil. How are you?
I'm good, Doc. Hold on for a minute. Just move it down a little bit.
Yeah, okay.
I'm good, Phil. How are you?
I'm fine, Dr. Sadler. I'm talking to...
I know you're talking to a million other people, but I had a point that I wanted to make, and I had to sit on it through the news, and it's a... it's an important point that I think your audience wants to hear, or would want to hear.
I understand that. I just wanted to make sure that I had the right coverage here in terms of our camera three.
I don't know from camera three, and I forgive me for saying this, but I don't care.
You know, Phil, this is Chris Norton. I think I know what he's going to talk about.
Yes, you do know what I'm going to talk about. I'm going to talk about, as you asked me, Mr. Henry, to talk about, you wanted me to talk about how I know Mr. Norton.
Can I just say one thing, Doc?
Go ahead.
I would hope that you'd be delicate in how you portray it, because the cess, it was, speaking of commercial, it's commercial cess.
No, I know it was commercial sex. I know it was. Mr. Norton and my wife engaged in a sex scene for an adult film. My wife, Tammy, was an adult film performer.
Right, and it was commercial sass. I mean, it was intense sass. There's no, and I think that's probably what you're worried about, right?
No, I'm not worried about that, and no, I never heard that it was intense, and that only makes me angrier. Right.
Boy, my audience has got to have to process this. You're telling me that your wife and Mr. Norton were involved in, both of them were involved in the adult film business.
No, I'm not telling you anything about Mr. Norton because you know that Mr. Norton is an adult film performer part-time. I'm telling you about my wife, Tammy, and the fact that she had a sex scene with Mr. Norton. All right, but that's not the end of the story.
No, I'm but I didn't mean to say that we had intense sex. I'm just saying that there was a sensible, you know, a sensuality between us.
I don't care, you know.
Well, all right, I don't want this to dissolve into something, okay?
No, it's not going to dissolve into anything. I'm trying to spit out what I want to say so I can move on, because I had to sit on this for your entire break that you did there. That's why I was upset, because I wanted to say this. I wanted it to become public knowledge.
It was commercial sex.
Yes, I understand. Can I finish what I'm saying?
Let him finish, Mr. Norton.
All right, okay, fine.
My wife was in the adult film business as a performer. When we met, she then gave up because I gave up being an adult performer because I provide for her very well, and she didn't need to do that anymore. And someone just turned the radio on.
Sorry, I just want to get the sports.
Sir, can you turn the radio off?
Get the sports.
I'm sorry. I just wanted to hear what the baseball. I'll turn it off. I'm sorry. Okay.
Yeah, I think we need to do that, Mr. Norton, because then we can concentrate on what we are saying to each other, if you don't mind.
Okay, well, what's that?
It's cops. But my wife's watching it. I'm not watching it, all right?
Well, I find that distracting. You know.
Can we just maybe pot that down a little bit?
Tammy? Can you turn that down?
Can you say hi to her for me, or is that...
No, I'm not going to say hi. Yeah, Tammy, Chris Norton says hi.
Hi, Chris.
She sounded, her cheeks sound filled out or something.
What cheeks?
Well, it's just from the last time I knew her, it sounds like there's a largeness in her face.
She's put some weight on. Is that what you're referring to?
Hey, Chris, how are you? Love you.
Would you get back to watching television? Yeah, she's a little disappointing, yeah.
All right, well, better you. I shouldn't say that. I was going to say better you than me.
She's only put the weight on recently. Mr. Henry, can I finish?
Yes, would you please?
Well, I mean, I didn't know that I was going to be spoken to like that.
I'm going to speak to you like that until we get this thing moving along. It is taking forever. Now, what is the story between you and your wife and Mr. Norton?
There is no... You just made it sound like it was a three-way.
There's no three-way there. You know,
I'm sorry. The story between your wife and Mr. Norton.
My wife was an adult film performer. She went to the set one day when we were engaged to do a final scene with Mr. Norton. When my wife returned that evening, she had a full syphilis infection. And Mr. Norton came to me the next day and said, I know you're not a medical doctor, but have you got something for the drip? Knowing that...
Did you say it that way, sir?
He certainly did.
I said, I know you're not a medical doctor, and I'll use just a regular term since you're not a medical doctor. I said, have you got nothing for the no drip?
Well, have you got nothing for no drip?
That basically means, do you have something for a drip?
And I said, yeah, I got something for a drip, and I'm looking at one, didn't I? Didn't I say that?
Oh, you said you thought about it later, but you didn't really get it out.
Well, no, okay. The point that I'm making, Mr. Henry, is that he infected my wife and then had the gall to come into my office the next day and say, don't you have nothing for no drip? And
He was saying he had an STD?
Yes, he was saying he had an STD and he wanted treatment for it. I was offended. I told him to get out or I would pick him up and I would throw him out. And as you know, I'm a weightlifter and I can do that.
Yeah, a lot of your muscles look artificial, like they're roid.
My muscles are not roid. They're not roid-driven, okay?
Yeah, but I think there's roid rage going on there. You know, when you went home and you beat your wife.
I didn't beat my wife. I went home and I slapped her once. Wouldn't you? Mr. Henry, you there?
Yes, did you hit your wife?
Mr. Henry, I'm asking you, wouldn't you slap your wife if you found out she had the drip?
I had the drip. She was the recipient of the drip.
She was the recipient of the drip. She had it too.
You let your wife work in the adult film business, correct?
Yes, sir, but I didn't know she'd come home
I didn't know she'd engage in the sex scene with a guy. What this guy had, he had the drip.
Well, I don't know the culpability of the performers themselves, if there's a level of trust, if there's a testing. I don't know how that all works, but you smacked your wife?
He came home with it.
He thinks it's okay to smack her if she goes on a drip, you know, but, I mean, I gave it to her.
Yeah, and I should. So you're saying no?
I'm saying absolutely no. Absolutely no. We have to take a break. It's 12. We got to take a break. Thank you very much, gentlemen. We'll be back. World famous Phil Hendry show, talking here about this epidemic of syphilis in the adult film industry in Hollywood with Chris Norton and Dr. Jim Sadler. World famous Phil Hendry show. We'll be right back.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry show.
I didn't slap her. I didn't slap her.
We're crying.
World famous Phil Hendry show.
Welcome back here to the world famous Phil Hendry show. 877-876-7445. Of course, we're in our news and information hour, so we're not. We haven't really taken any phone calls tonight, have we, Bud?
No, not really, because both of the people are douchebags anyway.
Don't say that on the air, man. You can wait till we get off the air.
Man, I told you.
When do we get off the air?
Well, I mean, most of the people are douchebags anyway.
That's great. That really encourages people to call, huh?
Well.
No, not well, nothing. Thank you, Dr. Jim Sadler and Chris Norton. And I apologize, ladies and gentlemen. I had no idea that I thought we were going to talk more extensively about this problem in the porn industry. But apparently these two guys have some unfinished business. Dr. Sadler's wife used to be a performer in the porn business or the porn film business, and she was infected with an STD by Chris Norton, who then came to Dr. Sadler the next day and said, "Haven't you got nothing for no drip?" And that was the end of that, and I don't know what else, and I don't really want to know what else. And I don't really care. I do, but I don't. It's a very bizarre hazard to be working around. The adult film business is one that is foreign to just about everybody. It's a very select group of people that work in that business, and it is a very broad range of people, obviously, that watch or consume that kind of entertainment. But the people that actually work in that business, it's very specific work, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I don't know how many people are in it.
Yeah, it's pensioners, fewer of them than there is doctors.
That's not a bad. I bet there are fewer adult film performers than there are doctors, which means that their services, theoretically, not necessarily are going to be worth more than a doctor's, but depending upon the market for the product that they sell, they're going to be handsome or should be handsomely compensated, unless, of course, it's run by the mafia.
Hey.
Thank you. Now, I shouldn't say that, because I have no information, and that's probably an old wives' tale or whatever the hell you want to call it. All right, but I hope you guys, if you'll pardon the expression, clean up your act soon. World famous Phil Hendry show. Now, getting back here to the Republican convention, it is underway in Tampa. There were comments made that were a bit untoward. One from Ellen Barkin saying that these Republicans ought to get washed out to sea, and then one this evening from one of our listeners, Mr. Gene DiCarta, who said that he hoped Anderson Cooper would get hit on the head with a flying stop sign in the middle of that hurricane. So obviously there are some feelings running rather high on both sides. Is this particular convention, the Republican National Convention, anything worth watching? Is it exciting? Is it thrilling? The answer, of course, is no. And I'm not saying that as a knock. I'm not saying that to mean that Republicans are not worth supporting. I'm just saying that the conventions, especially this year, are really going to suck. And generally, they're exciting and fun to watch because there are those floor fights. There's fights over the philosophical direction of the party. There are fights over this plank or that plank in the platform. You know, there are feelings can run very high, especially when one party feels that they're about to lose their grip on the power, or if one if another party feels threatened in another way. So they can be interesting, and we've seen them, haven't we? But this year, it's a real snoozeroo, baby. Mitt Romney, a former governor of Massachusetts who has aspired to reach the White House since his father first sought the office four decades ago, George Romney, was nominated by the Republican Party here on Tuesday as its choice to become the 45th president of the United States. The elevation of Mr. Romney at the Republican National Convention completed a six-year quest to navigate the contours of a changing party and opened a well-choreographed effort led by his wife, Ann, to swiftly reintroduce him to Americans in the hope of gaining the trust of voters and bolstering his campaign to defeat President Obama. Mr. Romney swept into the convention from backstage after watching his wife deliver a deeply personal speech that made a direct appeal to female voters, whom she reassured, "You can trust Mitt."
I don't know, man.
Well, he had... By the way, you can trust Mitt. I'm sure you can trust Mitt, and I'm sure that... But there's a lot of headlines that are not exactly, you know, helping Republicans these days. One of them was one that was sent to me recently, as recently as last night. I don't really get all of these messages all that quickly because mine is not what one would call a news-breaking kind of a radio show. But I did get a message from a friend of mine here. And it was of a news story, and the headline is as follows. New law in Arizona states pregnancy begins before conception. New law in Arizona states pregnancy begins 2 weeks before conception.
What?
Hold on. A new law was signed by Arizona Governor Jan Brewer and went into effect on Thursday that has abortion advocates up in arms. Went into effect on Thursday? Last Thursday, then.
Well, no, that's tomorrow.
No, it ain't tomorrow. Tomorrow's Wednesday. It must have been last Thursday. A new law went into effect in Arizona, went into effect on Thursday, that has abortion advocates up in arms. The new law, titled Women's Health and Safety Act, deems a woman pregnant 2 weeks before conception. According to Planned Parenthood in Arizona lobbyist Michelle Steinberg, the law will reduce the amount of time a legal abortion can be obtained by women. Steinberg stated that the law is our nation's most extreme piece of anti-abortion legislation. What this really is they're starting a woman's pregnancy from her last menstrual, the last day, or the first day of the... It calculates gestational age starting with the first day of the last menstrual period rather than the date of conception. So when they're calculating how many weeks have you been pregnant...
What are you looking at me for? Yeah, he wants to know when you was pregnant. Shut up, man.
Hey, I'm just looking at you. I'm thinking, okay? Looking at you. So what they're doing is when you go for an abortion, and it's critical, as you know, the trimester that a woman is in, depending upon each, you know, depending upon what the time frame is, depending upon the law and so on and so forth, you know, which, you know, first trimester abortion as opposed to second, as opposed to what the legal parameters are for third, they're going to include in your gestational period all of that leading up to conception from the first day of your last menstrual period.
I don't understand.
Well, that's good that you said that, Bud, because most Americans won't understand. I mean, well, I shouldn't say that. A lot of people won't understand. Guys like you, Bud, won't understand. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry show.
I don't understand.
I know.
Phil Hendry.
Famous Phil Hendry show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast. News Talk and Entertainment show knows what to talk about. Sorry, I just raced right through that. You know, it's
now sometimes you just got to do that, man. Like everybody knows.
Yeah, everyone kind of knows the watchwords and catchphrases of our show. It is a news talk and information show that knows what it's talking about. We do. We know what we're talking about. We may not be saying anything you agree with, but believe me when I tell you, I know what the hell it is I'm talking about. And what am I talking about? What I'm talking about.
Yeah, and you know about it.
And I know about it. Now, somebody may come along and say, you're full of crap. And I'll say, God bless you, sir. And that's kind of the way it is. But I can tell you that this is what I am. What the hell am I? Never forget I even brought it up. Now, I was talking early on, in point of fact, I was talking during our pre-show, the one part of the show that is not on the air. It's actually on our video cast. And David G. Hall called and was ripping me a new ass for some of the stuff that I was saying on the pre-show, which I won't go into here because it was quite pointed and very honest. But I also was pointing out to the audience, and I thought you guys might find this interesting, because we have a frame of mind about news. News, 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 news. To me, that's where it's at, man. I mean, not what's being reported. What's being reported, it can vary. And the best reporter these days with the internet and everything else is really you and me. We can go to the internet and we can go to a variety of sources and we can find the news a hell of a lot faster and a lot clearer and a lot better than somebody's, to use a word that they used to use in the 40s, than some of these monkeys, you know?
Yeah, you gotta watch out. It could be like racism.
That's not racism.
That's not. I'm saying it the way the old guys used to. Look at these monkeys. They could be talking about a white guy or a black guy.
Yeah, I know, but you just never know.
I never know what?
If you're being racist.
I never know if I'm being racist?
He knows if he's being racist.
Now, why don't you shut up? I'm talking to Phil.
Hold on, bud. What are you talking about?
I'm just saying, man. You know, if you say all them monkeys, you know, are you being racist?
No, I'm not being racist. How many times do I got to tell you?
All right.
But I never, the part of what you just said there I didn't get is I'll never know.
Well, I don't know. You may forget or something.
I may forget. No, Robert. I'm totally clear that what I'm saying is the term monkey to me is very funny, and it can mean a white guy as well as a black guy. You know, the first time I ever heard that used in a colloquial way, in a non-racial way, was in a Laurel and Hardy movie.
Are they black?
Are they black?
Shut up, will you? No, they're not black.
All right.
And it was a Laurel and Hardy movie, and they were pushing a piano up some steps. And a cop came by, because one of them had just kicked some chick in the rear end. And the cop came by, and he yelled up, I want you monkeys to come down here.
Oh, he was talking to the two white guys?
Yes.
Yes, you don't used to talk that way about anybody.
In fact, the line was, he says, tell that guy to come down here. And he says, that guy wants you. And he says, not you, the other monkey. And that's when Stan says, he says he doesn't want me. He wants the other monkey, meaning the big guy.
Fat guy.
Yeah, the big fat guy, Oliver. That was the first time I ever heard that term used in a, if you will, a colloquially populist or popular way. Anyway, I am digressing. So, this evening, and I did this during the pre-show, and if you'll pardon me, I don't want to be rude to my radio listeners. I would reach over, and I'd go ahead and fire up. Well, maybe we can get the old New York Times fired up here. Yes, we can. There it is. I'll go over to Camera 4, Sector 3 here in a moment, folks, and you'll be able to see what I'm talking about. But I was talking about news and how it's being reported, and I was talking about the rush that we have these days, the rush that we have to get information out there, and how often it is misreported. Well, the fact of the matter remains that news has never been all that accurately reported, no matter when. And I use as an example something that was one of the most glaring examples, I think, of the news media getting it wrong, and getting it wrong from a rather early point. And that was, as long as we're looking at the front pages of the New York Times, you know, that's what we like to do on the show here in our the later stages of the show. The Chicago Fire. Now, that happened in 1871. And if you look at the New York Times that I'm going to bring up here, if I'm ever able to actually bring it up, will I be able to do this, bud?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's busted.
You know what? I think it's been sitting in the, it's just been, well, there's 1871. Let's try it one more time. So what happened was this. On the night of August the 8th, 1871, in the city of Chicago, I believe in the South Side, I'm not exactly sure when, but in the night of August the 8th, a fire broke out in, or I'm not sure where, a fire broke out in a boarding house run by a woman by the name of Mrs. O'Leary, and we all know the whole thing about the cow. Well, how was that cow, what exactly did happen, you know, because there was a formal inquest, there was a formal investigation into the cause of the fire. The people of Chicago by that time, even though it was the 1870s, they still had an apparatus for investigating those things. They had an official apparatus, and they were as concerned as you and I would be about how the hell did a fire start that burned half the damn town down, you know. And they weren't going to be satisfied with, well, you know, Mrs. O'Leary's cow kicked a lantern over. Get out of here. Let's find out what happened. And the investigation centered on that house, and it centered on the individuals in that house that night, and they were having a party. It wasn't really a wild, crazy scene, but it was a party. They were drinking ale, and they were also eating oysters. And back in the day, in the 1870s, and I don't know where the hell they got these oysters from. You think they got them out of the lake or something?
Probably got them out of Lake Michigan, yeah.
Yeah, what are they? They're going to be like lake oyster. That's, man, you don't want to go near a lake oyster.
What are you talking about?
What do you mean?
Just, that don't sound good. Lake oyster's dumber than sea oyster. Remember you were saying?
Oh, boy, this is a new one on me.
What, man?
Phil was saying a lake oyster's going to be dumber.
I didn't say anything about lake oyster is dumber. I said lake fish generally are not as intelligent as saltwater fish.
Yeah, so didn't that stand a reason?
Well, okay, let's just say that lake oyster's dumber than regular sea oyster. What's that got to do with whether they taste good or not?
They probably don't. If they're dumber, they don't take as good a care of them. So I don't know.
Oh, come on, bud. I'm going to, you know, just because it's necessary, I'm going to have to punch you if you say one more dumb thing like that.
What?
Yeah, I'll be right with him, man.
What was dumb about it?
What was dumb about it? You know, one of the things about you is I've noticed this. You want to have something to contribute, and I appreciate that, bud. I really do. But you've got to think about what it is you're saying. Just because I say that saltwater fish would probably be more intelligent than lake or freshwater marine life, shall we say, doesn't mean that lake oyster is dumber and therefore tastes better because it, or doesn't taste as good because, you know what, I can't.
Just go on, man.
I can't talk about it. All right. So.
Yeah, so you giving up?
Get out of here, man, before I start swinging on you.
You'll be sorry.
Yeah. In any event, back in those days, God, lake oysters dumber. Back in those days, they would eat oysters, and they ate the oysters with milk. Probably in a bowl or something. I don't know. How would you do that? But that's what they did. So at some point in the evening, somebody left Mrs. O'Leary's boarding house and went around the side of the boarding house down to the stable to milk the cow. How do we know this? People who lived in the residence behind Mrs. O'Leary's main living space there where the party was going on remembered hearing foot traffic going back and forth between the front of the house and where the stable was. And even though it was Chicago and it was a big city in those days, in every major city, you had animals. Animals were kept in the city for milk, for butter, for eggs, and so forth. And so the investigation centered on that. And I believe that they came to the conclusion that some dumbass was back there milking the cow and probably threw a cigarette butt or a cigar butt or something or something from a heat source or a source of tobacco fell into the hay and you had yourself a fire and the damn thing got out of control. It wasn't some cow kicking over a lantern. But in any event, on the 9th of October, the New York Times reported the following thing. The fire, no big deal. There was a fire in Chicago, and it's under control. And by the time we put the paper to bed last night, there was there was no loss of life. And maybe one person died, and that was from smoke or something. And the other thing we want to tell you is very little damage, and the earlier estimates of damage way overstated. And the fire's been contained, and the fire department of Chicago has got it under control, and was only about two square blocks, yada, 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 yada. That was it. That was on October, the 9th, in the New York Times. The next day, all hell had broken loose. And you look at the difference between one day to the next in terms of the morning edition of the New York Times. The next day, they got a huge map of what's been burned. $50 million in damages. Can you imagine what that is in today's dollars? $50 million. Banks swept away. Houses swept away. Businesses swept away. These are the headlines. The city is in such distress that they're asking for help. They're asking for donations. They need food. They need blankets. They need medical supplies. And, of course, Americans and people being people, even then, like today, everybody, you know, whatever, what do you need, man? All kinds of stuff poured into the city to help the people. But in a 24-hour period, it went from under control, everything's a beautiful thing, to a $50 million disaster, and Wall Street felt it. Wall Street took a major hit that day. Because there was so much trading being done based upon the money going in and out of Chicago, even today. So, you know, relying on the veracity and the professionalism and the news gathering skill of news people has never, ever, ever been an intelligent thing. Sooner or later, you're going to have to get the news yourself. Now, in those days, of course, there was no way of doing that. You had to start trusting people. So what you had to do in those days is you had to take about 6, 7, 8, 9 different newspapers and try to figure out where the hell is the truth in all of this garbage that's coming to me. And it took longer, a hell of a lot longer. The biggest thing about the internet is that today we can access multiple sources of news and we can find out pretty much within, I'd say, an hour to 2 hours, what exactly happened. An hour to 2 hours. No matter how fast breaking the story. Because there's lots of people looking at it, and there's lots of people reporting on it. And in all of that rush, there are some sober and confident and smart people doing their due diligence and reporting the news. It just, in those days, took a hell of a lot longer, man. And boy, did they butcher it when they butcher, just like they do today. Only you can correct it a lot faster. All right, we'll be right back on a world-famous Phil Hendry show. Should we get Bob Bakian back up?
Yeah, get Bob Bakian.
What? In any event, Bob Bakian next. For the world-famous Phil Hendry show, he'll be reporting from New Orleans.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
Do it, man. My New York Times disc is not allowing me to go into the month of October. It's probably I need to clean off some of the pizza juice and earwax that's all over that thing from Bud.
Yeah, I didn't know.
Anyway, although there was kind of an interesting little headline I saw there, Brigham Young arrested for murder. In any event, on the day that Mitt Romney is nominated to be the Republican representative as the candidate of the representation of the thing for Republican of the United States of America presidential nominee, and they're like that.
Hey.
Thank you.
What that got to do with it?
Just ironic, that's all. No big thing. Brigham Young, you know, he had, man, they were out for him. They wanted him bad. They wanted him bad. I don't know. The Mormons have a history that is very interesting. I'm not going to say it is a, you know, I think it bespeaks a religion that also was very heavily involved in. By the way, Chris Christie, and I can say this because I used to be a fat man, you better drop about, say 150 pounds, man, because walking out there, there comes a time, kind of like when Bachman-Turner Overdrive. You know when how fat they got? You remember that?
Yeah, sort of.
There comes a time when you can't be 800 pounds and be an effective leader. Yes, I can certainly understand William Taft. I think he was 900 pounds or something.
How much did that guy weigh anyway?
William Taft was over 300 pounds. Bobby Smith, I don't know what his name was, Taft. President Taft was over 300 pounds. And I think Chris Christie it needs to go ahead and, you know, go ahead and hit up the Jenny Craig or whatever he needs to do. Hell, I'll get the weight off of him, man. How much have I lost? I got on the scale today. I'm 227. Man, this last 18 pounds is going to be excruciating.
You said you got to go down to 210, right?
Yes. I'm 227. I lost a big pound from last week. So this last 18 pounds is going to be hell on, or 17 pounds is going to be hell on wheels. I think I'm going to have to go out and continue my efforts at burning it off, you know, with the calories, because, you know, burning the calories off out on the beach, because I had lunch today with my my wonderful daughter, Catherine. We had lunch up in Santa Barbara at a really great place, and we had a couple of salads. She said, well, where do you want to eat? I said, well, I think it better be a place that's got salads, because that's my, you know, that's what I eat. So we picked a, she picked a really cool little brew pub kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah, it's like the like a brew pub, and I have food.
Yeah, you, that in Santa Barbara?
Yes, Santa Barbara. It was like a brew pub. And it was fantastic. I didn't have anything to drink, but she did. And I'm kidding. No, she didn't. Although it looked, actually, it didn't look all that good.
But they have.
Well, you know, call me old-fashioned, but I am I really supposed to get excited over pomegranate brew? I mean, what, why?
It's just, it's kind of interesting, the different flavors and stuff.
Yeah, what's wrong with that, man? I mean, like, don't you, if you drink regular beer, that like a barley flavor, right?
I don't know. It tastes like beer to me.
What do you mean?
What do you mean, what do I mean? It tastes like beer. That's what beer tastes like.
So you want your beer to taste like malt and barley?
Yeah, I guess I do. Yeah. Because I'll tell you something. I had that Tecate beer. I think it was Tecate that had that lime flavor bullcrap in it.
Yeah.
Man, I would rather drink out of a toilet. That stuff tasted so lousy.
What?
Oh, that stuff tastes like garbage, man. That lime-flavored beer? Get out of here with that. No way. No way. So, you know, we went into this place today, and I didn't have anything to drink because it's the middle of the day, man. I got to work. I don't drink. I don't drink during the week. If I drink at all, it sure as hell ain't during the week.
Why not?
Because it puts you to sleep, because it just grogs up the day. I don't know why. I just don't, you know. But I did look up on their little chalkboard. You know, they had the little chalkboard thing that says, pomegranate brew and some other jazz. No, thank you, man. Not me. But they did have a nice selection, so we had a salad. But I was talking to her, and she was you know, asking me about the diet. You know how girls are. They are women. They're always
yeah. I want to watch the weight and stuff.
Yeah, and I told her. I said, you know, I've dropped all this weight, but I think I'm going to have to get out and do the whole jogging thing. And you know, women seem to be more conversant with health stuff. Why is that?
I don't know. It's like maybe they just are more, because they got to be, man.
Yeah, women always, everybody always talking about how they look and stuff.
You know, you're right about that. That's been, I guess, if there's a benefit at all to women having been viewed traditionally physically more so than men, it's that women pay more attention. Well, okay, if that's how you're going to look at us, then I guess we got to pay attention to our health. And they've got more information on health and stuff, right? But she told me, lower your calorie intake, and it'll be the same as going out and kick-starting your metabolism. And I said to her, you know,
man, that'd be tough.
Yeah, I said to her, I don't know if I can do that. You know, I mean, I'm every day since March the 19th, I've been holding myself to 2,000 calories. And it's all that I've been able to do, man. I'm telling you, it's all that I've been able to do to stick to that diet of 2,000 calories. And now you're telling me to drop it down. She goes, well, just down to 1,900, 1,800. I'm like, oh, yeah, maybe I could do that.
Didn't you tell me one time you said 1,800?
Yeah. Yeah, there are some days, man. It was very brief there. There was a period there back in June where I would eat no more than 1,500 calories, and I'd go to bed. I was fine. I wasn't hungry. And I remember thinking, what is that? What's going on? Why am I not hungry? And I wish I could go back and look up some of those old... I do keep track of everything I eat, but I don't have June. For some reason, I lost June. Or maybe it was May or something, but it got cut off somehow. Anyway, we'll update you on all of that stuff tomorrow night. And everybody along the Gulf Coast listening to us tonight, bless you, and the good Lord keep you, and everything's going to be okay. And we are going to be back here, and we'll talk at you tomorrow night. And the rest of you guys, just, you know, get lost. No, I'm kidding. It's great to have you with us. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show is produced by myself and Dan Northcraft, me, Phil Hendry, and Dan Northcraft, and, of course, Bud Dickman and Robert Leonard here along the way as well. Get a backstage pass to all of the marvelous things we offer at philhendryshow.com, and that way you, too, can be a part of the BSP family, baby. Till tonight at 10 o'clock, let that be a lesson to you.
Phil Hendry.